Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hey fans, Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, registered sports dietitian and your host of the podcast. We have so many amazing guests that come on and tell their story with nutrition, athletics, or maybe provide their professional insight. And it hit me that as we have so many listeners now, maybe you only know me as the host of the podcast and as the one asking the questions. And in this episode, I really wanted to give you my story. I wanted to give you my journey with nutrition, my expertise kind of from that firsthand experience. And to just kind of backtrack, I started this podcast in 2020. Our very first episode was released November of 2020. And that one was actually titled My Journey with Sports and Nutrition or something along that line. And that is the only episode where I really gave you my story. Of course, if you listen regularly, you probably in some weird sense feel like you know me. I'm pretty open with myself on this podcast as well and sharing tidbits about not just my expertise as a dietitian, but my personal relationship with food and things going on in my life. And that's wonderful. But I really thought that revisiting my story and my journey with food and athletics might help you as you hear me continue to interview guests and really just help you in your journey with food and nutrition. Yeah. So since that first episode in November of 2020, and I don't even know how many people listened to that, maybe like 32 people. I don't know. But since then, we've been consistently putting out an episode almost every week. To date, as I'm recording this, we have 177 episodes aired, probably more by the time I put this out, and over 300,000 downloads. That's like on average 1,500, upwards of 2,000 downloads per episode. And that's usually within the first week or two that they are released, which is mind-blowing to me that like upwards of 2,000 people are listening to each episode, and amazing. I'm so happy about that because I believe that we're putting out great information and getting guests that are inspiring and role models and speaking for the betterment of female athletes out there. I do believe that. And anyways, I just thought again, like I'm always the one interviewing, but here's a bit more about my story and my journey with nutrition. I'm actually going to do two parts to this. The first part is going to be, I guess, like the beginning, my younger years, you could put it. Like part one is like more of my youth and part two, more present day. Or we could look at it as part one being, you know, my struggles with nutrition and really how I overcame them. And part two being where I'm at now as somebody who's like, I'm good with nutrition. Like I'm great with nutrition. And how do I maintain that or adjust with new things in my life and ebb and flow? You know, we could also say that part one, I was more of a competitive athlete in part one of my story versus right now in my life, I'm absolutely a recreational athlete. So those are some differences. I was kind of thinking about my journey and I can almost like separate them and almost draw a line almost at my 30s. Maybe it was more like when I turned 29, like pre-29 years old is part one, age like 15 to 29. And then post-29 years old is going to be part two. But it's not just about age. It really is about that relationship with food and athletics. So here we go. Let's dive into it. In part one, I'd like to say that like a question I ask my guests all the time is when in your life did nutrition come on your radar as something that was important? And for me, I honestly kind of forget if it was high school or junior high, but somewhere in high school time, I really started connecting the dots between nutrition and performance. I was a gymnast growing up, and I was a pretty good gymnast. I was a level 8 gymnast. I probably could have pushed to level 9 gymnastics, but I did choose to compete on my high school team, which competed at a lower level and was a lot more relaxed. But it was a lot of fun to join that high school team. And I'm not going to lie, winning is fun. And since it was at a little bit of a lower level for me personally, it was fun to win a lot. And anyways, with that being said, as a gymnast, if you know the sport of gymnastics, there's like a lot of like superstitions or just like we get really regimented, really, that's the word, regimented. And so I became very regimented in my eating in the sense of like the day that we had a meet, I would be very specific. And it was in high school, I got really specific. I always went to Subway and I got a tuna melt with pickles on a specific bun that I don't even think they have anymore. And I got the yellow energy vitamin water. And like, that was my thing on gymnastics meet days. I also competed track and field in high school. I don't know that I was super as regimented with that. I think there's a little bit more with gymnastics of like flipping around in the air, being in the leotard, you know, being a little more body conscious. I was like very, very specific about that. I also did in high school start implementing things of like having some Skittles or Starburst like during practice. I really loved that yellow vitamin water for sure, and had that a lot at gymnastics practices too. So it's just simple things of like being a little regimented with what I was eating as it pertained to performance. Sandwiches worked well for me. I remember even in track and field when I competed that in high school on a meet day, doing sandwiches, pretzels, Gatorade, and then again, some like Skittles or Starburst or fruit snacks and things like that. Just kind of knowing like simple, easily digested things that won't upset my stomach, gave me energy, tasted refreshing. And again, specifically to gymnastics in those meets, like really timing it, like kind of dialing back, like when do our warm-ups start and eating an hour before warm-ups. So that was just like my like regimented mindset of knowing that, hey, I need to eat, I need to time it, I want to feel good in my body, I want something that tastes good so that I perform well. But I think as this was going on, I was also introduced to the concept of counting calories and dieting. It was just something that I grew up with in the 2000s. There's no blame to anybody or any specific thing, but it's as simple as the fact that like I was aware of counting calories. I was aware of the Weight Watchers point system. It was a really big thing at that time to have like 100 calorie snack packs. And yeah, I don't know exactly when it happened, but I definitely started calorie counting. Nobody told me how many calories to eat. Nobody told me, you know, what was too much or too little. Nobody taught me about macros, but in that calorie counting, I also did some macro counting. And by the way, I did not own a smartphone then. I was doing pen to paper in my journals. Again, if you kind of think like personality trait, I was kind of a numbers person. I excelled in school generally and math, just kind of like numbers made sense to me. Athletics, like, I don't know, just like that perfectionism personality trait, I guess, of wanting to do things right, I would start journaling out my food. And yeah, I hesitate to say this, but I'll share it anyways. Like I do have vivid memories of like trying to keep it to like 1500 calories or something like that. And it did include things like, oh, I will bring half of a peanut butter sandwich to school, or I'm going to bring a Clif bar and I'll eat half at lunch and half before practice. Like really starting to minimize things. And again, I do remember trying to eat those 100 calorie snack packs. Like I wanted to eat the Oreos, but in my head, I thought that the right thing to do was to eat the 100 calorie snack pack of Oreos. I really did love food. I love food. I enjoyed it. My mom was an excellent cook, made balanced, well-rounded dinners most nights of the week. Like even if I was growing up as a kid at gymnastics practice till 8 o'clock, I would come home and like a whole plate made for me just waiting in the fridge to be reheated in the microwave. Like I grew up with really a balanced diet and I'm really grateful for that. But I also had the exposure of like a SlimFast shake could be a meal replacement. And I remember when I was in high school and I was a camp counselor for this like youth summer camp and like grabbing a SlimFast and calling that breakfast. Yeah. At that time, if I'm being 100% honest, like I mostly thought that I was doing the right thing. And that right there, that like that's the definition of what we call diet culture. It's the culture that normalizes dieting or this concept of less is better or like to watch your weight or be mindful of it or like eat the healthier choice. Like that is diet culture. I was dieting in high school without necessarily fully realizing it or like intentionally doing it. I did not resonate with having an eating disorder, nor did I really even understand what disordered eating was. In hindsight now, I would call that disordered behaviors of tracking my calories and macros and eating half a sandwich and eating a SlimFast shake as a meal. Like, that's disordered eating behaviors, but I did not identify it as that at the time. I just really was, like, thinking I was doing it right. But I don't want to lie. The seed was planted of like being conscious of my body. Again, diet culture, like it just, I had two sisters, a mom, like we just like things were said growing up that implanted maybe a fear of like gaining too much weight. I historically was a smaller person and generally still am. And, you know, even including height and bone structure wise, like some of this is in my genetics, but like in high school, like I didn't reach 5 feet until freshman year. So I was generally just a shorter, smaller person growing up. And that also was implanted in my brain of like, oh, like identity wise, like I was little Lindsay. And identity wise, that was something, I don't know, I think I held on to trying, you know, I didn't intentionally say to myself, I need to stay small. It just was like, that's who I was. So that's how I intended to stay, I guess. And maybe things were said over the years of like, warning me of not gaining weight or maybe praising me for being the smaller person that just, you know, subconsciously, you hang on to those things. So there was a sense of body awareness of like, again, I was a gymnast. I was in a leotard. I was being judged. I, you know, had, and in high school too, high school athletics, it was almost, for me, it was like, it was less competitive. So it was more fun at the same time. Like I would show up to school the next day and like, maybe one of my peers had watched me, you know, as opposed to like the club team where they didn't watch you. And so there was a little more body consciousness around that. So yeah, the seed was planted of being aware of my body, having this identity of a smaller person, and then starting those disordered behaviors that I did not think were disordered, to the point where when it was time for me to pick a degree and go to college, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Sports were really important to me, but just being a physical therapist or an athletic trainer or an occupational therapist, like I was researching all the like physical related things and they at the time did not sound interesting to me. I think they're fascinating now, but at the time I didn't want to study them. And it was my own mother who pointed out the fact that, hey, Lindsay, you're really good at your diet. You know, you're really regimented. You're really good at eating healthy. Maybe you could teach other people how to do that too. And again, it was coming from a good place. I do know that and believe that. And in the end, she was right. It's led me to a great career and I have absolutely loved it. So moms are right. But isn't that so crazy how in hindsight, though, it was kind of coming from this place of like, you know, mom, diet culture, myself thinking that like calorie counting and being regimented was a good thing. And so that set me up for thinking this is the right way to do nutrition, you know? Well, anyways, then I went into college and I did start studying nutrition. And I also switched over to track and field as my primary sport. And I did compete at a Division I level. I was recruited, but not a scholarship athlete. So a recruit walk-on, right? Like I was talking to the coaches the year prior, making sure it was the right fit. But, you know, essentially, you know, I was a member of the team, but I was, you know, I was at the bottom half, that's for sure. But I was excited to have that opportunity to be on the team. That was amazing. And I loved being a part of a collegiate track and field team. My identity as an athlete, I was meant to do that at that time in my life. Hey, listeners, I'm quickly going to pause my own conversation and my journey with nutrition and fueling to let you know some exciting updates. I have officially launched a brand new website focused on this podcast.
It is femaleathletenutritionpodcast.com. You can't forget it. And in my personal opinion, there's a lot more tweaks I want to make to the website in these next coming weeks and months, but done is better than perfect. I just was ready to publish it and make sure it was available to you all. My intent and purpose of this website is that if you are a fan of this podcast, the website is basically an expansion of that. First and foremost, you can find all of our episodes. You can search for an episode. If you're like, I wonder if Lindsay ever did an episode on ketogenic diets, go ahead and type that in the search bar of the episodes, and it'll, you know, have any episode that mentions it will pop up. Or, I wonder if Lindsay ever did, like, I want to listen to all of Lindsay's episodes about Reds. Type in Reds in the search bar and you'll come up with lots of episodes about it. Or you can be more specific. If you're like, hey, I'm a male athlete that listens to this podcast, type in Reds for males and see what pops up. So first and foremost, the website's a great place to listen to our episodes and search. It's also a great place where you can support the podcast through a financial contribution, and we would be oh so grateful for that. It is technically through our Patreon page, but the links are on the website where you can give a donation of $1, $5, or $10 a month to keep this totally free for listeners podcast going, because it is not a sponsored podcast or a heavily advertised podcast. So I would really appreciate from our listeners that support to keep going. You can get in contact with me through the website. You can give a guest suggestion. You can apply to be a guest through the website. We will have courses coming up. I've released many courses through my business before, and so we're going to be launching those in due time. So this is going to be a place where you can learn more and find resources. And so many of our guests on the podcast are also people who provide services to help you. Perhaps it's a personal trainer, perhaps it's another dietitian, perhaps it's a doctor or a chiropractor who might be able to help you. If somebody has been a guest on our podcast and provides a service, I do have a page where all of the episodes where people who provide services and help are available. So if you're looking for a physical therapist to get in touch with, you can find that person through the episode. Last but not least, though this is not a heavily sponsored or advertised podcast, there are a couple of companies that I've built great relationships with through the years, being a sports dietitian as well as a podcast host. So some companies you might have heard me speak about before, like Prevenex Supplements or Inside Tracker. We've had many of these people be guests on the show, and we offer you as listener discounts. So all of our discount codes and links that are available will be on the website so that you don't have to go back to old episodes and try and figure out where XYZ product was mentioned. Everything will be hosted here on the website, femaleathletenutritionpodcast.com. Like I said, I have a few pictures I want to update, a few tweaks here and there, but done is better than perfect. Please know to head to this website, share it with a friend, and make sure you share this podcast so we spread the word. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Back to my story.
I actually want to pause really quick before I continue with kind of what happened in college. Going back to high school, a little bit more of like, this was to me in high school, this was such a side note, but now with what I know now, this is a big deal, which is that I was, at the time, we were calling myself with quotes around it, a late bloomer. I did not hit puberty until 17 years old. And even at that, it was kind of a struggle. So at that time in the 2000s, I think when I was 16, you know, my family history, nobody was an early bloomer as it goes. Sorry to spill my sister's dirty laundry, but I'm going to. Like, they didn't get their menstrual cycles until like age 14. My mom said that she didn't in her life until she was around 15. But here I was 16 years old, still not with it yet. And technically, that is what we call primary amenorrhea, when you are without a menstrual cycle at 16 years old. And quite frankly, at 16, I was starting to get embarrassed about this. You know, girls in high school would talk about their periods or cramps. And of course, like, they were saying, oh, it sucks to be on their period. But I was also like, I honestly had to like pretend like I knew what they were talking about because I didn't know. And in one sense, I was like grateful to not have it. But in another sense, I did feel left out of something that I knew was supposed to be happening. We did seek out help from a gynecologist at that time who kind of told us to just keep waiting, kind of taking note of the fact that I was an athlete and I was on the smaller side. And I think there was a plan in place to potentially start hormonal intervention if it didn't come like by age 17 or so. But I know my mom wasn't adamant about that and was just kind of like crossing her fingers that it would happen. Nobody spoke to me about my energy expenditure in sport or what I was eating. It was like those, it was as if these two things were completely unrelated. And we know now, hopefully you know now, that they are related. Maybe genetics play a role for sure, but I do think that my high activity level, my probably body composition and low body fat percentage at that time, due to the nature of a combination of genetics and my sport exercise and activity and gymnastics background, like I think that absolutely contributed. And that's what we call primary amenorrhea. And that's not good. But on the flip side, I also wasn't necessarily having any bad symptoms because of it. I wasn't having any ill effects at that time in my life. And there's one other part to the story that I just want people to know. And I don't know that I've ever shared this on the podcast before, maybe as like a little side note, but I'm going to tell people now because I'm older and I don't care. But I actually did get diagnosed with an ovarian tumor my senior year of high school. And I started to feel some pain, and I was actually at an indoor track meet and I got wretchedly sick afterwards. Then I was up all night throwing up, and we thought that maybe I had like appendicitis or something. And I forget how it lined up. I don't know if I had a GYN appointment that week already. I don't know why I didn't go to the hospital if I thought I had appendicitis. I don't know. I was in a lot of pain. And then it turned out I did have an ovarian tumor that was actually like causing me to be sick. It was both fluid and solid mass, and I could feel it. I was having pain in my ovaries, but at the same time, I hadn't had a period, so I like didn't really know what like pain, ovarian pain really was to really clearly identify it. It's so much easier now at my current age and all I've been through to like identify, you know, uterine cramps or period pain or whatever, or like my ovaries. And like at that age, I had no clue. This was so foreign to me. It was uncomfortable to talk about my lack of period. It was so awkward to get diagnosed with this tumor. It was like, I think my mom was more scared for me than I was because I didn't really know what it meant. You know, my mom definitely at the time was nervous. Like, would I ever be able to have kids? And I didn't really know that that was a possibility or something. And anyways, this tumor, we kept an eye on it. Like, I think at first they thought it was just a cyst. And by the way, when I say just a cyst, I say that because it's actually very prevalent. Like up to 30 or a third of women will have a cyst at some point in their lifetime, whether they know it or not. But I'm not discrediting it. Some cysts, fluid-filled cysts, can be very, very painful, extremely painful. So when I say just a cyst, I don't mean that that's not a big deal. But also a cyst can come and go away on their own, or that they're not necessarily as harmful. But my tumor did increase in size and mass, and it was making me sick. And I think like in a month-long follow-up, it had like doubled in size to the point where I did need surgery, like a full invasive surgery, not just laparoscopic. They had to cut me open, take it out. It really actually ruined my senior year track and field. I shouldn't say it ruined it, but yeah, my senior year track and field experience was not as good because I had the surgery and I had to sit out quite a bit, which actually reminds me of another story. Sorry, this is like reliving my past. Something else came up is that throughout the surgery and the rehab time, you know, this my stomach was cut open. So movement was very difficult. I spent a lot of time on the couch. And I was really adamant to finish out my senior year track and field and to compete in our division championship and state meet. So I think I missed the entire season. I competed in one regular season meet and then the division championship and then the state meet. And so it was really a bummer to like, I was captain and everything. And I also did do pole vault, and really terribly in high school at the time, they had weight limits on the pole that you were using. So if you were using a 120-pound pole, you had to weigh less than 120 pounds on meet day.
they called it a safety thing. I don't, you know, we know that in the professional sport, you get to use whatever pole you want and, you know, your weight helps you bend it. But in high school, those were the rules. And I did gain weight while I was on the couch rehabbing. I was couldn't be mobile after this very invasive surgery. And yeah, I actually do remember another terrible diet thing of like just really watching my calories, counting my calories. I was drinking this weird like diet drink that had like some, I don't even know, some amino acids that like said I was supposed to help lose weight if I just drank those. And I was drinking like three of them a day and they cost like $1.50 each at the gas station. A Sobe energy drinks. I don't even know if they still make them, if anybody remembers those, with like the cool little lizard on them. Yeah, so I was like totally wrapped up in diet culture of like needing to make weight for the pole. And I did. And then I competed. And then I also got mono and I like did terrible at the state meet. I showed up and I did it, but like I didn't feel good. My body was run down. I was still recovering. Like my immune system was shot. I probably wasn't fueling well. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, like I actually was back in like 2017, I was inducted into my high school National Athletics Hall of Fame, not national, high school athletics Hall of Fame. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, it didn't really end the way I wanted it to. It was difficult at that time. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really reliving this right now, like live as I'm talking this out. That was a difficult time, but I got through it. And I think I was just like hopeful looking ahead to college at that time. So anyways, I wanted to bring that up as well, because I did have primary amenorrhea, but we did not identify it as being an issue. And then I also did have an actual tumor. So was that related to my primary amenorrhea or not? It's very hazy, fuzzy, kind of unknown at this time. And I do say this too, because for most female athletes that are struggling with amenorrhea and have a high activity level involved in sport, maybe not fueling exactly right, like usually this is fixed by proper nutrition and fueling better, but always go seek a specialist or a doctor because there could be other reasons going on. I don't want to scare anybody. This was like a 1 in 100,000 chance of the type of tumor that I had on my ovary, but those things are possible. Lesions in the pituitary gland in the brain are possible. There's other reasons for a missing period. And as somebody who experienced an ovarian tumor myself at a young age, again, super, super rare, but totally possible, and is why, like, if you think that nutrition and exercise is causing your lack of period, dive into that and also get checked out by a gynecologist, get an ultrasound. You might even need a brain MRI just to rule out these other things that are possible. So, okay, so that's a little like side tangent there, but it's also part of my story because after that ovarian tumor removal, I then struggled still to get my period and then I just went on birth control. And that was like the proposed solution of like, well, you need your period, you're going to college next year, like you just go on birth control. And so I just went on the pill. And then I started getting my period on the pill, but I was not educated at that time to know that that wasn't a real period. That's a withdrawal bleed. I was getting the estrogen and progesterone from the pill synthetically every day, but I wasn't, that wasn't my own natural hormones and it wasn't like a real period. I had no clue about this at that time. Neither did my mom. This was very normalized at that time. And so as I lead into like my college career here too, I will say, well, I was like freshly on the pill. I also am recovering from this very invasive surgery. And then I'm starting college life, new friends, new lifestyle, like eating out of a dining hall now on my own for the first time. And I'm competing at a high level at a Division I university. And, you know, I was the top of my sports in high school, but now I'm like kind of in the bottom and I felt that pressure to like, you know, be good and be great. And then on top of that, I'm studying nutrition and dietetics. And I believe in the power of nutrition, that it can help my performance. But what I'm studying in school is, you know, very diet culture-y, but ultimately, or like medical nutrition. It was really focused on, you know, prevention or treatment of chronic diseases, including things like diabetes or cardiovascular disease, or just addressing like weight loss and obesity. It was, you know, really our nutrition courses. We brushed over the topic of an eating disorder. Like the idea of disordered eating was not anything discussed. I really liked my program. I'm going to speak very highly of the nutrition program at UMass Amherst, and I had some great teachers and mentors. But it's just, you know, the curriculum was just kind of setting me up to encourage the behaviors that I had started in high school of like more calorie counting, the thought that eating healthier means like eating less or more salads, really focusing on micronutrients, trying to do low fat. All the while, my training has increased from, you know, 2 hours a day to like four plus. I've got the pressure. I've also got the social life, you know, where sometimes we stayed up late in the off season on Friday nights and ordered pizza, which then made me feel not so good physically or mentally about myself in the morning. And then we walk into the dining hall and then it's this like, you know, all you can eat setting. And there was just a lot of like trying to figure it out that felt really difficult in college. I felt the pressure to keep my weight down. I felt the pressure to perform better. And here's the thing too. Sorry, as I'm like explaining this, I'm reliving it. It kind of hurts. Like it didn't work. It wasn't working for me. And that's what was so upsetting about it at the time is that I was trying so hard. And I can even now, I feel so silly like getting upset about this, but here I am, 34 years old, like super accomplished. And I look back to my collegiate athletic career and I'm like, I just feel like I had so much potential that I never lived up to. That is truly how I feel about my collegiate athletic career. And I was trying so hard and I felt defeated. And I think that nutrition became something for me to like try to grasp onto to try and perfect. Like, well, I'm not good enough. Am I, you know, hurdle time isn't getting better. I'm not pole vaulting any higher than I wanted to or thought I could. I would feel upset after a meet and then I would just like kind of be like, well, you know, I can do my diet right. Or like, well, if I could just lose 5 pounds or if I could just like be the girl who did her diet perfectly or something like that. It was like going through my head. And by the way, again, throughout all this time, I love food. I love all food. I love savory food. I love salty food. I love sweet food. But I definitely love sweet food. And it just became like this love-hate relationship too of like, I wanted to be the girl who could enjoy the cupcake or the ice cream and be like, yeah, I'm eating it. I don't care. And I did. But then like when I was alone in my room later on, like it made me feel guilty. Like, but why couldn't I be the girl that didn't eat it? You know, that's honestly, those were some of the internal mental struggles that I had. I did eat the ice cream and I'm glad that I did. I wasn't like that restrictive because I needed the fuel. At the same time, I had a lot of mental guilt and shame around eating the ice cream. And then it was like, it became this like compensation thing of like, okay, because you ate the ice cream, now tomorrow for breakfast, like you don't need that extra piece of bread. Like I started to compensate, right? And some of the habits that I fell into in college, which are so common in many clients that I've worked with over the years, are just like, you know, enjoying the foods that I wanted to, having that, you know, quote, indulgent moment, but then like the next day, like skimping out on like having just a bar for a snack, something small calorie, or thinking, well, I don't need breakfast right when I wake up. And like, you know, or just buying like the lighter version of stuff so that I was like underfueled throughout the day, because then I would like in some way, shape or form, like make up for it, whether it be late night eating or having the ice cream that I wanted or weekends that I was off track, which just led to this cycle. It was not a strong, like restrict binge cycle that some people resonate with, but it was similar to that of like, you know, mentally indulging. I don't even want to say indulging because it really wasn't. I needed the calories, but mentally I felt like I was indulging and therefore I mentally put restrictions on myself, which did lead to over time, like slight underfueling and then potentially slight overfueling, or I don't even know that I was overfueling. It just like gave me that mental guilt for it. So it was a mental battle for me in college. And again, performance-wise, I just wasn't ever where I thought that I could or should be. And also by senior year, I was really run down with a lot of like injuries. My ankle specifically, I had had an ankle surgery. I had had a stress reaction. And more musculoskeletal, I had this big hamstring issue, piriformis issue.
And senior year of college, very similar to senior year of high school, my season just kind of came to an end because of an injury before I was really ready for it to. Again, that piriformis hamstring was really hurting me. And senior year, I also got extremely sick, just run down, super high stress levels, lots of anxiety, inflammation going on. I actually came down with shingles, which just goes to show that my like immune system was shot. Shingles is like the adult version of chicken pox, and it affects your nerves, and it happens to people who are very often immunocompromised, or sometimes the elderly. And it happened to me, who on the outside was supposed to be like this healthy, fit collegiate athlete. And I got shingles at age like 20 or 21. And that wiped me out of, once again, my senior year final track and field season. So that was a bummer to end like that. And I'll add to this just that senior year of like, between getting shingles, having the injury, like my training volume greatly reduced. And then I felt like I was gaining weight again senior year. And then two things happened. One, of just like feeling bad about myself. Two, like sometimes the more compensation, my hamstring injury was really making it difficult to sprint. I was a sprinter, but I could like go out on a jog okay. And then I started to like do like 3, 4, 5 mile jogs, which doesn't make sense for a sprinter to do. But in my head, it was my only way to like burn calories. And that's what I was concerned about, because I could feel the weight coming on. And by the way, again, like hindsight is 20/20. I'm not somebody who has the experience of having big jumps in weight. We're talking 10 pounds. I'm not talking 50 pounds. I'm talking 10 pounds. But in my head at that time, it felt like 50 pounds. It felt like it wasn't me and my body. Again, going back to kind of who I was in high school, I had that identity of little Lindsay. That was not my identity in college. I wasn't that little. And then I experienced weight gain, and I experienced muscle growth too, because I was on a Division I collegiate program. We had strength and conditioning coaches. Like, I gained muscle, I gained fat. I wasn't little Lindsay anymore. And that challenged my identity. So that was all a struggle. And by spring of senior year, I found myself purging quite a few times. And I never admitted that to any of my friends or my coaches or anything. I think I had the knowledge to know like what bulimia was. And I was like, oh, that's not me. You know, I just don't want this food here in my stomach anymore. Like, I ate that, but I feel bad about it now. So I just like, I'm just going to like do this real quick. So yeah, I did that. And then yeah, just kind of letting that sink in as I say that out loud. I've shared that with clients. I've maybe written it out a couple times. But as I mentioned in the beginning of this podcast episode, I have a lot more listeners now. And that sucked to do something that, you know, you rationally knew was wrong, and that I was going to go into this career field where I'm supposed to help people be fit and healthy. And I was doing something that I obviously knew was wrong. It made me feel like a fraud completely. So many times I just told myself like, okay, you're just not going to do that again. But then something would happen, you know, my college friends, we would have a graduation party. I'd eat a couple too many cookies. Oh, darn, you know, and made me feel bad about myself. And so there's no like pretty answer, is this like magical way that it stopped. But as college ended, I moved back home for the summer. And I actually remember for Father's Day, which was in June, I went to visit my sister in New York City. My whole family were with my dad, like walking around Central Park, and I just felt so uncomfortable in my body. My hamstring was hurting. I was injured. My pants were tight. I just felt so uncomfortable. And I just like remember sitting on this park bench and just being so mentally in my head. I was not present for Father's Day. I was not present with my family. That is my memory of Father's Day that year in 2011, is like being uncomfortable in my body. No clue what we talked about. No clue how my dad was feeling on that day. I was so self-consumed with being uncomfortable in my own skin. But I also, seriously, on the park bench, had this moment of clarity, I think, of like, there's nothing you can do about it. Because no longer could I go out on the 3 to 5 mile runs to burn off calories. I couldn't even walk around Central Park without pain in my hamstring. I couldn't. I was in physical pain. I don't know what this like injury thing. It was just like overuse, like 8 years of training at a pretty high level between high school and college. And it was just run down, probably undernourished, underfueled. And like, I couldn't even walk around Central Park. And I just had this feeling of like throwing in the towel. And as devastating as that might sound, I think that was the beginning of my healing. The rest of that summer, I really didn't exercise. My exercise was, can I walk without pain? And I also, in being at home, again, like I mentioned, you know, I grew up with my mom cooking good food, good dinners, and like we did that together that summer. And, you know, she was always excited that I was studying nutrition, about like what recipes we could cook together. And yeah, I remember making like a tabbouleh salad with her and like this like avocado mango salsa and our spicy chicken. Like I just remember making some recipes with her that summer and not focusing on exercise. And it kind of regrounded me. I wasn't happy with my body, but I just kind of had to let it go. I really felt like I was at the end of my rope. I spent 4 years in college trying to control my calories, like trying to burn off more energy, trying to be the best that I could. And it just like all didn't work. So I just got back to like less exercise and eating food that I liked in kind of a holistic, like feel good manner. Yeah, I wish I had more sexy way to put it than that, but that's it. And then that'll bring me to grad school where I'm studying nutrition. But I also want to say after 3 months of like taking time off, I, in grad school, was roommates with a girl who did distance running really for enjoyment and for fun. She was not competitive. And I started getting into that with her. I found that distance running, you know, it started with just going out on 2-3 mile jogs together and then 5 miles. And, you know, within my first year of grad school, I did a half marathon. And then like my distance running journey took off from there. But I think that the distance running was really rehab for me and my hamstring. I wasn't experiencing pain anymore. And as I started studying, this was now getting a degree in sports nutrition, I really started dialing in the things that I had missed in college. So the importance of carbohydrates, really perfecting pre and post-workout nutrition. At this point, I'm not a competitive athlete anymore, but I got like really into getting my pre and post-workout nutrition in, like making smoothies post-workout, like having carbs or sampling with sports nutrition products pre-workout. So I really got into the science of sports nutrition and really started applying it to myself. I also at this time, and thanks to the help of my roommate who became a lifelong best friend, Kelly, got into more intuitive eating. And we did not like read the intuitive eating book or anything like that. We weren't intuitive eating certified at the time, but it was just this concept of like, what sounds good? We started cooking together, making lunches together because we're both dietitian majors, and we're both runners, and it was just fun and exploring. I was living in a new city, exploring new restaurants together. Just what do you want to eat? What do you want to cook? Grocery shopping together. Having a friend who is more intuitive really helped me be more intuitive as well. But before I say that it was all sunshine and rainbows from here, I had my bumps in the road here. As I mentioned, this was a graduate program, a master's degree in sports nutrition. We absolutely did body composition testing. I was challenged to do a fitness competition in the bikinis. And I totally went down that road of, you know, trying to tailor my body composition again, but thinking I was doing it the right way this time. But I also was more of a recreational athlete at this point. I did begin to eat more, I will tell you that. And in changing my body composition, I actually probably was eating more than I was in college and was able to tone up. I added, you know, I was doing different types of workouts, and, you know, it was pretty cool to see the science of nutrition change my body composition finally after years that I couldn't get it to do so. But again, it was kind of combined with like, I took that rest time and I went down that intuitive path and I was working out for fun and enjoyment. And then I started to apply the science of nutrition. But the bump along the road when I did do that fitness competition in the bikini, like that was all fun, whatever. But I definitely then had that fear afterwards again. You know, you look a certain way and it's like, ooh, I don't want to lose this look. And after I achieved that look, I didn't necessarily go right back to my old ways. And I'm just going to fast forward to, I actually fainted at one point in time. And I really like it. I was working actually. My first job as a dietitian, I like fainted in a patient's room. My blood sugar wasn't low. My blood pressure was fine. But I think that I was just generally speaking, like undernourished and overworked. And this will lead me again to more points in my journey of a few more injuries. You know, I kept distance running, and then I had a big ankle injury, and I had to have surgery, and I had to go down this whole path again of, man, I can't run. But fortunately, at this time, and also with the ankle injury, I'll say this, I was struggling to lift as well. I knew that I could not control every bite I ate. I was past that. I was like, done were the days of calorie counting and reducing my intake or depriving myself or feeling bad mentally. So the next time around when I got injured, and it was after, you know, achieving optimal body composition with the fitness stuff, and then I get injured, and it just had to be this acceptance that I'm going to gain weight. And I did. And it was hard to go from, you know, being what I thought was my ideal body composition to then gaining weight and being beyond where I was before. But I'm proud of myself for at this point in my time, just keeping that mindset of like, the goal is to exercise without pain and to eat intuitively and enjoy food and certainly not compensate. I was over those past bad habits. And throughout this second injury that actually lasted like almost 2 years of ankle struggle and ultimately having a surgery, I got really into intuitive eating. This is where I did read the intuitive eating book and workbook. This is where I did start exposing myself on social media to different body types and kind of understanding body acceptance deeper, where I really challenged my views around weight and realizing that weight loss shouldn't always be the goal and realizing that there's a variety of body weights, shapes, and sizes in this world and that my body can take form. I really dove into body acceptance, self-love, alternative forms of exercise. I became a yogi at this point in my life. I always liked yoga, but I like really dove into it. It helped me as somebody who was a highly competitive person to kind of slow down and be in the moment and be present. And it helped me find more peace with my body as I did gain weight and lose what I kind of in my head thought was like, oh, progress. I'm finally at the body shape that I wanted. And then I lost it again. And again, in hindsight, I just have to say sometimes not everything is sunshine and rainbows after one moment in time, but each of these is like a lesson along the way, like finding more acceptance, finding more patience and grace for myself along the journey. So I really dove into intuitive eating, body acceptance, but as my leg did heal, of course, my competitive nature came back. A few years later, I'm in my later 20s at this point, and it did not stem from a place of weight loss or wanting to change my body. I had also made a decision I would never do a fitness competition again because at this point I am a registered dietitian and I'm really buying into the belief that all bodies are good bodies and that performance is what we need to be striving for, not an aesthetic look. So I swore off any sort of figure competition, dieting, calorie counting ever again in my life, dove into intuitive eating while doing so, while trying to get back into competitive running, or in my view, competitive. So it just started with signing up for more 5Ks and 10Ks and then half marathons, trying to get a PR, and then ultimately trail running as well. And this is kind of more recent times now. I'm going to bring you up to speed to when my now husband and I moved to Texas, which was in 2018. I signed up for a 20K trail race and became the first place female in that race, maintained a really excellent pace. It was really challenging. I just loved trail running at that time and was so proud of myself for accomplishing that distance. And I did all of that really combining that, like my, you know, I was about to say Monday through Friday. Let's erase that. That my foundational nutrition was just this intuitive, balanced, varied diet with all food groups, no calorie counting whatsoever, enjoying the ice cream and enjoying the salad. Neither is good nor bad, just whatever I wanted or needed in that moment, while also applying fundamentals of sports nutrition. Anything that for me at that time, anything over 8 miles included during training fuel. I really focused on electrolytes and hydration during and after workouts. I always fueled up pre-workout, always had recovery post-workout, in addition to my meals and snacks throughout the day. I just really felt everything coming together of combining intuitive eating with sports nutrition, of combining body acceptance with trying to achieve a personal best or train and push your body really hard.
And it all came together and I was just really loving. I got a PR in the half marathon, like I said, got into the trail running, and it was all making sense to me. Finally, after that whole year, did I just go through like 10, 15 years with you? I think so. And at that time is, in all honesty, that is when I started my business. And I was like, I've got to share this with other people. I started my business in 2018. I had been working as a dietitian and a sports dietitian for many years at that point, and really like accumulating all of this. Like, how can you be a highly competitive athlete while enjoying and having fun with food, while not having the mental shame or guilt, while not compensating? Like, how can you apply the science of nutrition with the freedom and flexibility of just enjoying food? And I felt like I had figured it out. And that's what I wanted to teach people. So I established my business. I started one-on-one consulting virtually online and built out an amazing program. And over the years, I've helped hundreds of women do the same thing. And then, like I said, in 2020, this podcast was born, kind of sharing that on a deeper level. So I brought you up until right around 28-ish, 29 years old. And I'm also going to share that it is at that time that I finally got off birth control. So this is kind of like the sub side story of this is throughout that entire time I was on the pill, I was on birth control. But I'm going to save that story until part two, which will come up next, where I'm going to share from around age 28, 29 until now, which included the pandemic, focusing on my business, getting off of birth control, going through two pregnancies, having other priorities in life, but also like this is at a time where I'm like 100%, like I do not resonate with disordered eating at all. I do not believe that I have any disordered eating behaviors, thoughts at all. It was a journey. It was a journey of understanding the science of nutrition while not overanalyzing it. It was a journey of having respect for my body in all the different forms, shapes, weights, and sizes it can take. It was a journey of accepting that there are time periods of injury and time periods where you need to do less, and there are time periods when you can push yourself. I hope just by like sharing this 15-ish year journey in story format has just resonated with some of you and just my personal life experiences. And for me right now, where I'm sitting right now, one of the reasons I want to share this too is because I do think that like in high school, so much of it started so innocently and it really did me a disservice in college and a few years post-college. It really did me a disservice from a mental perspective. And I truly do believe that my body was run down, undernourished, like immune system crashing. There was a lot going on in that college and like 1 to 2 years post-college time period. And this is why we want to be cautious of over glorifying people for, you know, being healthy because they're, quote, good with their diet or counting their calories, because it can very quickly lead down a dangerous path. And, you know, another thing was that my identity was so tied up in being the little Lindsay and being the high level athlete that then post college, when I no longer was a competitive athlete, and also maybe my body shape was getting bigger, you know, that really was a challenge on me mentally, but that's where that journey of like expressing myself in movement in other forms, whether it be, hey, I'm exercising with a friend because it's social, it's not for competitiveness, or I'm doing yoga for my mental health, not for physical health. Like all of these avenues of exploration are so helpful to get out of the disordered mindset that you always need to eat less and move more to be worthy. It's just simply not true. So, thank you for listening to my story. Part two is coming up next. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie. Please go check them out and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide, or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new Coaches Toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.